I'm very happy to present about another form factor than the PIP card for a change. Finally, me and my teammates have a draft SB 100-157 out, and I want to just point out my co-author Sal, if you stand up. Okay, David? Okay, once it comes to the difficult questions, okay? These are your point persons. Okay, so I'll do a presentation on the newly published draft SB 100-157, the RIFE credential, and also a document that's maybe less known is NIST IR 7981 about PIF mobile on the authentication. So to start off, I'd like to frame the discussion a little bit to scope it in. What's the purpose of SB 100-157, the derived credential? 157 is a document that is mentioned in FIPS 201. It supports HSPD12's common identification, and that is the scope of the document. So common identification issued to federal government and U.S. government wide.
Could the people on the phone please mute? We're getting a lot of feedback here.
So the goal is one goal right now, and it is to enable mobile devices to authenticate to remote resources, not to flash the mobile device against a PAX reader, because for that we have the PIF card, not to insert it or put it next to an laptop or desktop, because for that we have the PIF card. So if you look at this chart right here, this is from FIPS 201 directly, and for the PAX environment, we have authentication methods enabled by the PIF card. Enabled by the PIF card, and we have 1, 2, 3-factor authentication enabled by the PIF card. What is missing, however, or the problem is that mobile devices and the PIF card don't play good together. For usability, and I've mentioned usability before, it is difficult to use a PIF card with mobile devices, or you need add-on readers, or you need NFC with a yet-to-defined secure channel. So what do we do about that? SB 100-157 has an integrated PIF credential on the mobile device directly to make it easy to authenticate to remote resources via the mobile device, to use the mobile device just as you use your laptop to do work on. So I've added in red the PIF-derived authentication method to this column here, where the focus is for the SB 100-157. Motivation I've already covered, so I will not go into this yet again. So when we started thinking about the documents, Al and David, we realized that not one approach can accommodate all mobile devices. Say, for example, if you would have said, okay, let's do micro SD, that security token, put a derived credential on it and call it a day. Well, micro SD, as Chris mentioned before, won't work with certain devices, right? So there is a variety of mobile devices. So therefore, we needed to have a spectrum of choices to enable the mobile devices that USG wants to deploy and use. So let's start with the security tokens that that we have incorporated in or specified in draft SB 157. They were covered pretty good by Chris before. Their software tokens is a possibility to have the derived credential. There is micro SD to host the derived credential on it and slot it into the mobile device. USB security token, a Tangle that's maybe a little bit better removable than the other ones. The UICC, that's next generation SIM card, also a candidate or specified in SB 157, and the embedded hardware. Now, on this slide, in parentheses, we have estimated about when these technologies or solutions with derived credential might be possible. And I'll touch upon them on my later slides a little bit more. So what are the benefits of derived credential? Well, the usability piece definitely is integrated, better user experience. We have also, we're using the derivation process as well, in that if you already have a very well-vetted credential, the PIF card, does it make sense to repeat the vetting and the identity proof of the subscriber for the derived credential? No. So if the subscriber can show he possesses a PIF card, authenticates with the PIF card, the derived credential can be issued. So that's one of the benefits. Some considerations, and I think, Chris, you alluded to that too, is the provisioning piece. Now, these are different technologies, different security token, necessitating different, possibly different provisioning actions that need to be taken care of. Also, the support for the mobile OS for these different technology or security token are being worked on or have been resolved already, or it's a piece also to consider. Okay, so now we talked a lot about the security token that has the embedded secure derived PIF credential. That's not the only thing we cover in 157. We go on to describe the derived PIF credential itself. We try to take advantage of, because it's also a SURF logical access control, and particular remote access control, just like the PIF cards, PIF authentication certificate, a PKI certificate. We've also modeled it according to the PIF cards, PKI, PIF authentication certificate, to take advantage of the same infrastructure, to leverage that. So it's a PKI-based credential. It can be issued at a level of identity assurance 3 if it's a software token on the mobile device, or it can be issued at a level of assurance 4 if it's within the security token that's based in hardware. Like the PIF authentication certificate on the PIF card, the key size and the algorithms are the same choices as for the derived credential as for the PIF authentication keys as well. Now, I'm delving into one category of security token with the derived credentials. That's the removable security token. That is the UICC, the USB or the micro ST. These are removable, not in the sense removable after each use, or if you're done working, in the sense if you want to, your phone broke down, you need a new phone, you can put it in another, in your next phone. So they're removable in that sense. Well, not so much with the USB. The USB tongue could be removed all the time. So, correction on that. The PIP card had one interface. Well, actually, contactless. Sorry. Yep. So, for the removable security token, it has two interfaces. First, there is the application, and the application layer is the application, the PIF-derived application is a smart card-based protocol or application modeled after the PIF card application on the PIF card to get the same synergy or alignment with the less possible changes. Then, because the derived credential application is hosted on a medium, the secure sets, for example, the micro SD, it has to trunk the authentication protocol or service from the application has to go to natively to the PIF, to the mobile device, and therefore we need to specify something for the transportation layer to transfer those APDU back and forth between the mobile device natively and the integrated token. Not surprisingly, then we have the embedded credential, the embedded security token directly in hardware, part of the chipset on the mobile device. Now that's already there, comes with it, has no interface requirement, there is no need to transfer it from one medium to the other. There's no portability issue associated with that. Therefore no interface requirements. Okay, now getting a little bit into life cycle processes of the derived credential. Let's start with derivation. So the derived PIF credential can be created after showing proof of possession of the PIF card, cryptographic challenge and response, as I've mentioned before. The credential can be issued either in person or remotely. For an LOA4 credential, it's got to be in person. For an LOA3 credential, it can be done remotely. Okay, maintenance. So now, say for example, you need to rekey your derived credential on your token. We have specified the way to do that in SB800-157. For an LOA3 credential, you can do that remotely. Even for an LOA4 credential, you can do the rekeying remotely too. When you have that same token, if you issue the same token that the derived credential host that you're trying to replace or refresh. Now, when you issue a new credential, new replacement token, then an in-person visit is necessary. Termination.
So the last bullet implies that...
I'm not there yet.
No, the last bullet on the maintenance.
Oh, okay.
I mean, does that imply that a revoked PIF card doesn't revoke the derived credential?
So, no. So, if the cardholder is not eligible to have a PIF card, that's the only situation when you have to revoke the derived PIF credential. Now, that is not to say that that agencies can have stricter interpretation or stricter rules in that when the PIF card is revoked, but the PIF card holder is still eligible to have the PIF card or replacement card, the direct credential is revoked. So you can correlate it between the two, but it's not necessary.
Okay.
sorry, Sam, that was a good question, right?
I was just looking though, because that's the trick, and it says, like, so a lost PID card, it says derived from credentials unaffected by the loss of PID card.
Uh-huh.
A lost PID card gets revoked.
It's termination. Termination. We're talking about termination, not revocation. It's, so there's a difference. So the card can be revoked, but then he or she can have a new PID card. I mean, that's just the revocation. Termination is, you can't.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, so there's a difference there between revocation, termination, and expiration. So an expired PID does not necessarily cause a derived credential to be suspended.
No.
Effort.
Right.
That was
no.
the function.
Looking to my guys. Right. May happen.
Right. This PID card termination means that you're no longer eligible to have a card. It's
right.
not about one particular physical credit card. It's about whether you're eligible to have a PID card or not. So
it's
as far as the question about, revocation, if somebody steals your PID card but they don't steal your phone, then there's no need to revoke the certificate corresponding to the key on the phone. And vice versa, if somebody steals your phone but you still have your PID card, you need to revoke the credential that corresponds to the phone but not the PID card. So we don't see the reason to say, okay, well, your PID card is stolen now, all credentials have to be revoked even if we know that they're perfectly fine to use.
That is the value of the denied credential. Now, when you lose a card, you're not stuck.
Right.
You don't have anything until you get the degree. So
but on the other hand, if your card is terminated, meaning you're no longer eligible to have a PID card, then the derived credential has to be terminated too, because you're no longer eligible to have any sort of PID credential.
Okay. Yes?
The validity period on the derived credential, does that have to correspond with the validity period on the PID?
No.
When it's derived?
No.
So you could be issued a derived credential that's good for 5 years, even if your PID's going to expire tomorrow.
That just depends on the policy, the certificate policy under which it's issued. Right? Okay.
Or you find, by that, what you just went through, does that mean that the PID system needs to have two states, terminated and revoked, so they can tell the difference? Or is it, I think GSA's PID system has one state that's terminated with a reason code, or is there something we're missing in terms of a requirement to have terminated and revoked as with two states of a PID system?
Well, is that a GSA question? I'm not going to answer. What do you think?
No, but there's no NIST requirement to have two states to a PID card, right? We just terminate them. They have various reasons for it.
Well, an individual card could be revoked, but there's the difference between revoking an individual card and then issuing them another one because they're still eligible to have a PID card versus terminating, which means they are no longer eligible to have a card, and so you revoke the card that they have and you don't.
It's now equity.
GSA aligns with that.
You might be the archetype of the system, so it's terminated.
So the revoked could be because the card is lost or missing, but the person is still eligible.
Right.
But that does not mean that the arrived credential that was issued of the now revoked credential.
That's exactly.
Okay.
So,
that's
but
the separation.
An agency
Good.
Can take that stricter interpretation.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
That clarifies
but
it. That is
and some agency can say, geez, I get this is an opportunity for my employees to at least work with the mobile device tablet while they can't log into the laptop anymore.
We had quite a bit of discussion on this.
Did you?
In our call last Friday.
Well, look forward for the comments.
I would think the two would have to be linked together. If you're going to revoke the one, it's got to be linked to the other, right? So
it's an agency decision.
It's policy. It makes sense to do that. If you're going to revoke the card, why would you want to leave the derived credential on the phone?
That would be up to the individual agency to issue the search of the contract.
How will other agencies then know what that policy is?
Right. We seem to have quite a bit of discussion going on in the room.
So let me go back and say 800-157 is out for public review. You'll all have a chance to comment.
21st of April.
The iterations help.
I love you too, but just like that. So that was helpful. Oh, I've always told her I loved you.
Thanks.
It's the Italian one.
Am I on?
So, Hilde, if you could
speed up, am I on the clock?
No, you don't speed up. I mean,
all right. Okay.
There's 11 different discussions.
And so, termination have we just discussed, and the cardholder, when the subscriber is no more eligible to have a PIF card, then the derived credential has to be revoked or terminated. Let's say terminated too, in this case. Okay. So similar to the processes you are all familiar with for the PIF cards. PIF authentication credential, similar termination requirements apply to the derived credential. So if you cannot collect the token, if you cannot theorize and destroy it, then you will have to revoke the derived credential authentication certificate. I always do this. Okay, and naturally also, as I mentioned, we point to a new certificate policy that's being worked out for the derived credential in SB 100-157. We also, since we already have a security token or a secure element for the derived credential, we've also thought to include the digital signature key or the key management key, the encryption key, in that same environment as well. So Appendix A of 157, look it over, comment about it, provides a way how to do that. Okay, now this is Appendix C, the table of Appendix C in SB 100-157. When we started drafting SB 100-157, we soon realized that we are a bit in violation, or in discourse with current OMB memorandums, namely M0616 and M0716. These memorandum are about remote authentication, and they state that for remote authentication you need two-factor authentication. One of those factors has to come from a token or device that is separate from the device that you're using to access that remote resource. So separate from, in our case, the mobile device. So we had to discuss that with OMB and go up to the level of the Federal CIO Council we actually wrote a white paper about this and explaining why, for a usability perspective, that memorandum should not apply, and also from a security perspective that there's mechanisms to protect that credential on the mobile device itself. So a separate a token for that one factor is not always needed. This Appendix C actually has been coordinated with OMB in the table here too. The last column here now indicates which tokens will be under a new OMB guidelines for integrated tokens. These guidelines or guidance will come out. I'm not sure when yet, but there's text on the table for that. And let's see. think that's good. We also have the PIP authentication assurance levels indicated here as well. As you can see from the only one or two credential actually align with M0616 and M0716, and that'll be the USB Tango with the derived credential, or using the PIP card via attached reader with the mobile device, or via the contactless interface of the PIF card using secure NFC. Okay, this is one slide I have about the companion document of draft SB 10157. This used to be a white paper, and that showed the reasons why the violation with the separate token remote access is okay, and now it morphed into what we have posted on NIST website. So in this document, we describe each solution or approach of draft SB 10157, each secure token types in more details, and we're also covering the PIF card, how the PIF card can enable PIF-enabled mobile devices. We also point out pros and cons for each approach. I have an example here. One of the cons for the UICC is that cooperation with a mobile network operator is required or needs to be worked out in order for this solution to get to fruition. What we're also very interested in here is we have time ranges or categories specified for each approach as to when it would become available. So we have labeled it some approaches current approach and some of them near-term approach. And I think you've seen that in the parentheses of one of the slides that I showed earlier when I showed all the security tokens. So we'll be interested in your opinion. What do you think about, did we get it right when things are available?
Planning to go beyond near term?
Yeah, back to the future.
I think you want to look at or include the category that's beyond near term.
No, not necessarily, but we'll be interested, okay? We also go into recommendation in the later section of that document. We acknowledge that hardware-rooted solutions provide better security over software-derived credential. But as it is today, software derived credential might be more deployable at the moment because mobile devices, the majority of mobile devices are able to have a key store and have a way to have soft certs in there and the keys. But it's not as secure. So we recommend whenever possible to back this software approach by hardware whenever the key is not used. So store it, protect it in hardware. We also look at long-term, Tim. So this is the long-term. So we also look into the long-term, and we recommend the adoption of hardware-supported secure mechanisms. Root of trust, the other trust. but that starts from the bottom up, is anchored in hardware, link to firmware if applicable, and also into reaches up to the software for added assurance. That might be one of the strongest way to protect a drive credentials private key. An example is SP 100 164. But this type of solution is not quite readily available. So NIST is working with industry and you all to see if this method cannot be furthered more and be a possibility in the future. Okay, so we have until April 21st to have a link right here for both documents to receive comments. Just a little, that's my last slide. Just a little bit more, what's next? So we're going to, we're going to go through the all the comments that we receive and finalize that document. We're also going to work on a derived credential test requirements document that tests the data model of the derived credential and its interfaces. We're also going to look into portability because there's two interfaces there for the removable token. Not only do we have to look at the APDU level, but we also have to look at the transport layer interface to make to ensure or get as close as possible the portability of that security token. So when you take it out from one device and stick it in the next device, because your other device died or is retired, that the authentication that you're doing with the derived credential still works. Also, a heads up on, and then after we have the test requirements out, we're working on a tool to test this data model and interface. Do the usual dance with the laboratory accreditation program to get test laboratories that can test to this. And finally, that's all for the testing. Also, a heads up, we're currently also working on the accreditation piece of the derived credential. SB 179-2 covered the PIF card issuance controls, and this time it will also include the derived credential issuance controls as well. Okay, hold on a second. So here's the authors, and Jason, he's an author too, I forgot to mention, sorry about that. Okay. Thank you for all the reviews that we received. We had reviews from the MTTT. We had reviews from the FICAM Logical Access Working Group that Rush was heading, and the Federal CIO Council and OMB. So we hope it's a good product. We're looking forward to your comments. Any questions?
On the previous slide, do you have any time frame?
So we have tentative time frame. It all depends, a lot depends on how extensive are our comments on 157. It doesn't make sense to start the test requirements document before 157 is on secure footing, on stable footing. So it's hard to predict right now, Michelle. So I don't think it's going to be this year. It might be next year. But I have to look. Okay.
It's just to know, for example, whenever you will finalize the 800-160, how long you will take to finalize this week? How long you will take to go to the next step?
So well, yeah.
Right.
I mean, we'd like to be in the 6 month period, but it, yeah, it's hard to predict. Yeah, Tim. Sorry, Michelle.
So one of the things about that that I think is so difficult is that you don't know what kind of comments you're going to get back. And I would like to think that if there are significant and large numbers of comments, that not only do you incorporate the comments, but you let people have another chance to review it and comment on it. It's always a little frustrating when there's right. significant and large numbers of comments, and then it comes out final. It's like, hello, how'd you get there? You know.
Yeah. Right. Right.
No other questions. Totally. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Thank you.